Welcome, Eagles, to another edition of Trackcat, special guest exclusive podcast right here on the TrackCatNight.org website. Folks, today is Monday, or no, it's not Monday. What is it, Friday? Why did I say Monday? My goodness,
what
Eric,
we're not
great. Woo, is it Friday?
Friday. Yeah, it is Friday.
I said Monday. Somehow, I went through some kind of teleportation device, folks, because I said it was Monday. Wow, that shows you where I'm at. Something must have been in that peanut butter I just ate. But in any case, folks, listen, it's Friday, April the 16th, 2021. We've already got three podcasts down today. We just finished up with Harry Schlanger from the Roosh Pack. And we have a first-time guest on the program today. Very excited for this one. First founder work on Twitter, but you can get on over to her website here. We'll make mention of it now, but it's spingola.com, S-P-I-N-G-O-L-A.com. She covers similar material that we do here at TradCat. I was covering the New World Order, covering Zionism, covering Noahide laws, covering a lot of the health particulars that the New World Order is trying to throw against us or whatnot. Chemtrails and so much more, and even Sandy Hook, which is a interesting topic. I bring on Dr. Jim Fetzer on a monthly basis, and he of course is the man that sued in that Sandy Hook situation. She's got at least four books. I'm pretty sure this is updated now, but she's got four books out there that will help to promote here on the program today. But Deanna Spingola is joining us here in just a moment, folks. Before we do hand it over to her so we can get to know her a little bit, we have to make mention of our sponsors, www.agifttolight.com. It's a great candle company that offers a unique way to commemorate a special occasion or a loved one through a candle that displays your personal photos, prayer, or message. They're 6 inches tall. They're 22-ounce candles with a burn time of 120 hours. That's our latest sponsor. One of our newest sponsors is GenesisApparel.us. David Bain out there in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, and they bring you bulk discounts, low prices with no setup fees. Take advantage of their competitive pricing today. You can place an order today. They've created a TradCat Night merchandise page. I will try to get it up on the website later today. For those who want to support TradCat Night, want to check out that page, I'll do so in a little bit. 247rosary.com. That's Joe Blazak's latest endeavor. It's an online radio station that plays the traditional rosary every hour, half hour, excuse me, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thank you, Joe, for all that you are doing. We also have another prominent Catholic outlet. That would be John Dean's jacksberry.com. Get to know John a little bit. He's one of the original followers here at TradCat Night. John's been with us for quite some time, and he's got numerous websites himself, but he's got a Seven Sorrows section with a Father Void reflection that he wanted everyone to be aware of. So get on over to jacksbury.com. That's spelled B-U-R-Y, by the way. We also have Richard Gratzinger and his Glory and Shine, .com. They put forth their passion and love for Jesus Christ and Universal Church in action by creating natural self-care products with a divine purpose behind it. They always are trying to combine truth, inspiration, identity, belief, and devotion. Every item is crafted in their arsenal, if you will, with deep intention, while holding a vision of sharing the gospel. So check out their products, folks. Great for mind, body, and the soul. I've received some of these complimentary items. That's Richard Gratzinger's GloryandShine.com. They're our exclusive sponsor, by the way, for the next 5 web conferences. Our next web conference is tomorrow, so pick up a ticket, folks. It's going to be a fantastic show. We also have to make mention of our Turbulent Times kits. That's Kathleen Loney and her wonderful program, KathleenLLoney@gmail.com. Prayer, sacramentals, herbs in accordance with Catholic prophecy. And last but not least, Chris Gagne is inviting all Catholics and those like-minded in the area to remember those who have gone before us. So, Chris, thank you for that lovely reminder. As I mentioned, first-time guest, always excited when we get new guests on the program. Deanna Spingola, and as I mentioned, she is an author. She has her own program on Republican Broadcasting Network, so kudos to her and all of her work. But she's been at this for a long time, folks, and my goodness, so we're very honored to have her on the program today. But rather than go through some spiel where I've got something written down in front of me, Deanna, why don't we get to know you from your own mouth, so we can get to know you a little bit, where you're coming from, what inspired you to write these books, how the website and the radio program has come about. So let's spend the first 5 or 10 minutes getting to know you.
All righty. I first became aware that things weren't quite right. Excuse me. I have bronchiectasis, which I don't have COVID. Okay, I don't have the flu.
Right. Well, that's okay. Take your time.
Anyway, I first became aware that things were not quite right in 1973 with Roe v. Wade. I thought, wait just a minute. The Supreme Court just said it was okay to kill babies. And then, of course, I did what I thought was would be a benefit. I joined the John Birch Society. And then I realized, I don't think this is the right direction. I was just looking for a group that I could lend support to, gain support, interact with, and I soon realized that was not the group that I should belong to. So I opted out of that, and then I began writing in 2005 on the internet, and I just kept writing. And then in 2009, a couple of publishers approached me to write a book for them. And the first publisher, I thought, well, I should go with them. And I wrote a bunch of stuff that probably didn't have quite the direction they were going.
To put it mildly.
I sent them the manuscript, which was very long. I have a tendency to include every detail, sometimes to the point of redundancy. But I'm very detail-oriented, because I'm also an artist. I've been an artist all my life. And so I just, they opted not to publish me, unless I took out half my information that was really relevant and said, oh, you can't really target, certain people. And, we don't want you to do this. We don't want you to do that. But we'd like to maybe give you somebody that would help you to develop your writing skills. And I thought, and this person that they wanted me to work with had never written a book. And I thought, why would I go with that person who's never written a book, when I consider myself an accomplished writer? Even though I hadn't written a book by then, I still felt that I was accomplished to the point that I'd written as much stuff as I had.
Right.
And the point is, it wasn't that I had written so much as that I had researched a great deal, because I have a background in research. I've spent many, 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 many thousands of hours in front of microfilm readers and National Archives stuff and reading microfiche and just all kinds of stuff. I've done a lot of research. And there's primary research and secondary or compiled research. Mine is primary. In other words, I don't look to somebody else and say, oh, let me put a book together with all of these other people. When I put a book together, it's my thoughts from original records. Period. I don't use compiled records. And I really like and admire Jim Fetzer, but we have a different take on, well, particularly on Sandy Hook.
Okay. I'd like to hear that, yeah.
Well,
Well, we'll get to that. We could stay on your background if you want. We could circle back to Sandy Hook.
Okay. I have a whole website devoted to Sandy Hook, screeningsandyhook.net, where you can look up anything you want.
Okay.
And then I have my regular website, spingola.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then a gentleman that, a friend of mine, has developed another website that he maintains. It's SpingolaSpeaks.net, on which he puts all the audio files from my programs.
Oh, cool.
At Republic, not Republican, Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, RBN. Yeah, it's certainly a name that I think most of my listening audience would recognize. I've been on at least probably three different shows. I was mentioning that off air, Liberty Man, and a few others I can't recall in years past. But so it speaks to where you are at. I mean, you're definitely well listened to, and your opinion does matter. So let's get into some of these different topics, if you would. Let's start off with Sandy Hook, I guess. What is your different perspective outside of gyms? And I mean, what do you believe actually happened, and why is it still talked about today?
Well, it took me. The first people that came out and said that it was a hoax did so within 7 to 8 days. You really can't do that until you've looked at what happened, what allegedly happened. You can't just arbitrarily come out and say something without looking into the original records. And that takes time. Research takes time. You cannot just arbitrarily say that something is a hoax until you've looked at original records. And when you really look at who promoted the idea that it was a hoax, it was Anderson Cooper. When I was growing up, I've mentioned this maybe once or twice. When I was growing up, I was out with on a drive with my parents, and we came across this big billboard, and it said, "Don't look on the other side." Well, what are people going to do? They're going to look on the other side.
Uh-huh.
And essentially, within minutes, Anderson Cooper, who is the son, Gloria Vanderbilt, he was an internee or associated with the CIA during his college years. And once you're with the CIA, it's not like you quit. And what he did within, 10 hours, he was on his radio program. And he has a couple of different venues. He was on his radio program telling people not to go to these websites that were promoting Sandy Hook as a hoax. He said, "Now, don't go here." So what is everybody going to do? Not everybody, but just people who were interested.
Sure.
Well, they flocked by the thousands, by the tens of thousands to these websites that were promoting the idea that it was a hoax. Now, as I indicated, research takes time. And so I started looking into it and looked into it. It took me 2 years of research.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It took time to develop the articles on my website. It took time to do the research in my three books, in my trilogy. which has been censored by Amazon. So research takes time. It's not just a sudden thing that you say, oh, it was a hoax, just because, oh, well, you don't know that unless you look at the records, unless you do the research, or unless somebody like Anderson Cooper directs all these people to websites that were probably set up in advance. Well, maybe not in advance, but immediately after Sandy Hook. So it does take time. You have to look at all the original stuff, period. That's just what you have to do. And getting back to my trilogy, The Ruling Elite, it was initially on Amazon, and I have three titles: The Ruling Elite, Book One; The Ruling Elite, The Zionist Seizure of World Power. And that was the one that they took off pretty immediately.
Just shocker, right?
because of the title, just was not appropriate to see what they do.
Right. Don't want to be labeled an anti-Semite, right?
Exactly. And then they removed about 100 reviews of my other two books, and they're only available as Kindle. And there were probably about 100 reviews, and a lot of people use the trilogy for homeschooling, when they're homeschooling their children.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And when I initially started looking at Sandy Hook, I just put together a lot of articles on my website, and then I thought, well, I think I'll write a book, because I had sufficient information to write a book and to compile all this all in one place. And I have anything that you could possibly want to know about each of the 26 people, and a lot of things about the shooter. And the people that really, really would not want this information out is Big Pharma.
Oh, okay.
Big Pharma constitutes the majority of the gross domestic product in this country. We no longer produce cars. We no longer produce a lot of things that make for an economy. You cannot have a service economy and be a rich country. You have to actually produce product. And the only producers of product in this country right now is Big Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
And so the information that is in my book and what they would wish to conceal has to do with Big Pharma. But any country that loses its productivity is pretty much going downhill. And of course, our productivity, the people who were producing cars and all this other stuff, because of NAFTA and because of Kissinger going over to China on a secret trip in 1971, opened up China, because they had cheap labor there. He made deals with the Chinese to move a lot of our productivity to China. And many of the products that we currently use are made in China. And so their economy is growing like wild. I was there in 2007, and all the companies that we used to see here, Motorola, and, well, all the companies They have McDonald's. They have everybody you could name. They're all over there producing. Not that McDonald's produces anything except hamburgers, but I'm talking about actually producing cars and all the other things that we use. And their economy is fabulous. So it is what our country used to be before certain things happened.
Now, you mentioned, let's see if we can parlay this conversation to what's happening now with COVID. And with Big Pharma's hand into this, obviously, more pandemics, more vaccines, more money. We know you can't even sue them. And keeping people in the system, I know I'm getting to know you here a little bit better, but I went through a Book of Job experience, about 10 years or so ago, and I actually was prescribed Xanax, which is like one of the, from what I hear, one of the worst three drugs you really could take, benzo-wise. And I got hooked to it. And it took me like 2 years just to get off of that pill.
Oh my God.
And it was, I don't wish the symptoms, were hellish and nightmarish. But in any case, I contracted a syndrome off of this, which I still have to this day. I still have sort of lingering symptoms, but that's sort of my takeaway is they want you to constantly keep having these symptoms so you go back and you get hooked on the next drug. And then it just like spirals out of control where you walk. And one day you had one symptom or one problem, like anxiety or whatnot, and then like months later you're dealing with like literally 10 health issues, and it just keeps you kind of trapped in the system. So I know, the big money side to that, and we know it's no different with Corona, right? We know the rich are getting richer off of that, but I'm going to argue, maybe throw this out there, and maybe if you see it differently, but maybe are we like just this country, is it just we are just one giant Sandy Hook now? You understand what I mean?
We are, we're, perhaps you could compare us to that, but the head of Merck said that he wanted, and this was several years ago, he said that he wanted everybody in the country to be on a drug just like people chewed gum.
All right.
And so they developed using the diagnostic, let's see, the DSM diagnostic manual of symptoms or whatever. They developed all of these diseases, and the DSM grew from like 59 pages to 500. And so just about everything that anybody did became a reason to get you on a pill. And when the and in Connecticut, I assumed that there was one person who was the assistant department of what I call him. He was in charge of health and human services. And the Health and Human Services, I thought, and his name was Patrick, what was it, Patrick, I can't recall it. But Patrick said that they could not divulge Adam Lanza's medical records because it would cause everybody to go off their medication. And so they withheld that from the press. But what they want to do is have everybody in the country on a medication. And when you look at the number of people, which I include in my book, I give the number of people who are on certain medications. You know that they put infants on Prozac? Can you imagine putting a six-month-old child on Prozac? How would some parent make that decision based on a doctor's recommendation? What kind of a monster doctor would say, yeah, put this little 6-month-old baby on Prozac? That's a crime.
Crazy. Yeah. It's not surprising these days, but yeah, I try to stay out of the system as best as possible. Like, literally, I would have to be on death's door, and even then, I don't know. I don't think I would go to like a local doctor or anything. I try to avoid it altogether. But yeah, it is crazy, on that level in regards to big pharma, mainstream, health system or whatnot. But in regards, I had a question for you, and I know my listening audience is probably going to want to ask this too, along the lines of Sandy Hook. But like these recent false flags, or however you want to kind of put it in your terms, like these shootings are happening. There was just another one here in Indianapolis. I mean, they're popping up left and right like every day. Do you think that most of them are organic shootings, or is it a result of like some Manchurian candidate going out there and shooting up the place, and or like nothing happening, as Jim I think would say with some of these? Where do you kind of stand with these shootings, especially as of late?
I have only investigated Sandy Hook.
Okay.
Because you cannot just arbitrarily say, oh yes, that was a hoax. So I do not make any judgments about any shooting, ever, because I haven't done the research.
Sure.
I'm not going to put myself out there saying something was a hoax unless I've looked at it. Mm-hmm. And research takes time. Mm-hmm. But when I contacted the Health and Human Service, I contacted, the attorneys for the Health and Human Services in Connecticut. I chatted with that office, and coming to find out, they have 20 people, just 20 assistant Health and Human Services who work with this Patrick fella. They all work with Health and Human Services associated with the U.S. government. In other words, the U.S. government manages all of the Health and Human Services departments in each of the states. Now, U.S. governments, the U.S. government is the highest consumer and the best customer of Big Pharma, because they have jurisdiction over the U.S. military. Mm. They have jurisdiction over the U.S. educational system. They have jurisdiction over just about prisoners. Any large group of people, the people I've named, the groups that I've named, mm-hmm. The U.S. government is in charge of those people, and they are Big Pharma's best customer. And you'll find that if you look at the investments of the people in Congress, that they invest in Big Pharma, and they invest their money in ammunition. they know where to invest their money. That's why they come home millionaires if they retire, or if they're outed for doing something naughty, like Dennis Hastert. Apparently, he said the wrong thing or did the wrong thing, and so they outed him for the pervert that he was. Mm. So usually people who are politicians are compromised, morally compromised individuals who can be controlled and who are self-seeking criminals. Compromised. They're well-connected. You don't get to be a politician unless you have connections or are morally compromised or have the backing of certain people. And so when you consider that the government itself is Big Pharma's biggest customer, and they have 535 people working to promote Big Pharma, and they have control over all of these groups. Children cannot even go to school unless they have 72 vaccines, or by the time they're 18. Can you tell me 72 diseases that you are deathly afraid of contracting? Heavens no!
Right. Some Americans can't even count to 72. Now, this is very interesting, too. I actually just retweeted this. I was up on your Twitter handle. Get on over to twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. First of all, follow her. But I'm asking everyone to go out and retweet some of this information that she just retweeted from LifeSite News. And, again, I've had some of the main people behind LifeSite News, like Henry Weston on the show. What's the other guy's name? There's another guy that does podcasts there that used to do my show. But in any case, our position is for our community here at Track at Nights, we believe, obviously, there's an apostasy in the church. We're not following what the Vatican or Unholy See is saying at this point. We've been overtaken by Marxist, Masons, modernists. Listen to this, folks. The Vatican is hosting Fauci, Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Can you believe that?
Pfizer CEO. There is a supposed health
Crawford. Oh, my gosh.
It's nuts, folks. And this is in just 3 weeks.
A couple of Mormon elders. And I've also talked about that on my website.
This is nuts.
When you're looking at a church, most of the churches, the reason they have closed down and will not go along with the government on not having services is because most of them are 501c3 corporations. In other words, they have made a deal with the U.S. government. And so they're corporations. And the biggest corporation in the country, of course, is the U.S. government. The U.S. is not a country. It is a corporation. And the current CEO of the corporation is, well, it depends on how you look at it. It's Kamala Harris. Mm. Kamala Harris. I just don't think that Joe was really in charge of his faculties.
Yeah, to say the least. This is great news. I just recircled this. Now, circling back to the question, the big question, the macro level, when people come up to you and they'll say, okay, who or what comprises of the New World Order, groups, organizations, persons, what do you say in return? I know we could do a whole 2-hour show on this, but the nuts and bolts of it, what's your response?
What is the New World Order? Oh, gosh. I've got so many. Oh, my gosh. I have.
I know we could do hours and hours on this one.
I recently kind of redid my. I'm not great at putting websites together, but I recently kind of segregated things and divided things down to indicate what constitutes the New World Order. I did this back in 2006.
Okay.
And there are 23 parts. And so, beginning with in May of 2006, I started enumerating how the New World Order was being put together. And I have 23 parts in which I talk about economics, in which I talk about Bilderberg, in which I talk about religion, mm-hmm. and morality, and weaponry, and warfare, and the military industrial complex, and the conservative charade, and the religious right. I talk about all of those things in these 23 parts. And And then I talk about, in the same time period, about warfare and how the United States has used warfare. And in 1897, we made a deal with Britain, with England. And this was the same year, 1897-98 was when they held the first Zionist conference. And at the very same period of time, the United States and Britain decided that they would together partner up and that they would share the loot from the countries that they would begin to invade as a result of their partnership. And I also go back to the Civil War, which wasn't really a civil war at all. It was an aggression against the South, because the South decided, and rightfully so, that they were tired of being a colony for the North, which is essentially what they functioned as, a colony for the North. And so they wanted to opt out. And when you realize that only two battles were ever fought in the North, and that all the battles during the so-called Civil War were in the South, then it's pretty obvious that it was an invasion, a slaughter, in which they destroyed everything. They destroyed pets, everything in their path. Sherman's March to the Sea was a slaughter of everything imaginable. And I talk about that in my book one. And I'm really kind of a historian. And I talk about all this stuff. If you visit my website, and I'm still, it's a work in progress. I'm still going through a lot of what I have written and trying to put it together better so that it makes more sense and people can find things better. And I also, people kept asking me about this manifesto that I discovered and made public maybe 3, 4, or 5 years ago. It's called The Manifesto, and it was written in 1882 when a group, Christian leaders in 1882 got together in Dresden, and they decided, and this was September 11th, that's a pretty important date here, on September 11th of 1882, all of these Christian leaders in Europe met in Dresden to decide how they were going to handle this particular issue with this particular group of people, and how they were going to minimize the influence of this particular group. I have it on my website. It's down at the bottom of Spingola.com. And so it started in Dresden, September 11, 1882. And one of the bombings that took place during World War II. Now, keep in mind that Dresden was never a military town. There were no military targets there. There were no military anything. But it was one of the places that was bombed by Britain, by the U.S., during World War II. Of course, all of Germany was bombed in World War II. First, they started out with cities that had above 50,000 residents, Then they started doing bombing everything. Everything.
Yeah, I've had on, well, I have on quite regularly. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Monica Schaefer's work. Has she been on your show?
No.
Okay, yeah, Monica's a regular guy. I could get, if you want her, I could get you on her, get her to get you going on her show. She comes on every month and does my show, but yeah, she always is talking about Dresden and, the atrocities, but,
is going back to 1882. It had nothing to do with it being a military target. It had to do with revenge. It's a revenge thing. When they bombed Dresden during World War II, it was to get revenge on that particular city.
Yeah. Now, when did you first, here's a question for you, when did you first start, diving into the world of Zionism, covering the Jewish question, covering the Synagogue of Satan, covering Noahide laws? When did you first start going into, because it's basically a death sentence from the mainstream media. I mean, once you get that
anti-set.
Right. Yeah, I know. Like, I really don't care at this point. Everyone knows what I have to say, and I could care less.
Oh, right.
What people are saying. But when did you first, start realizing that? And I meant to mention this at the top of the program, Deanna, as you know, when you go down one rabbit hole, that rabbit hole leaks into like three or five other rabbit holes.
Oh,
and it's like,
certainly.
Right. Yeah.
Right. All of this doesn't just fall on your head. It takes time. Now, I did belong to a 501c3 cult most of my life. And this particular cult thinks that a certain group of people are the chosen people. And as I looked at the history is imperative. You have to look at the genesis of something to understand how it evolved. And I thought, I'm going to start really looking into the history of this cult that I belong to. And after I did that, I thought, my gosh, the founder was a pedophile. And I formally left this cult. But you always have to look at the history of something. You have to do the research. It takes research. I didn't just arbitrarily say, oh, it's a 501c3 corporation, so I'm going to leave. No, I did the research. And
do you think he was a Freemason too? And you could speak freely, Deanna. There's no censorship here. We're behind a paywall, so you could say, you could say Jews. You could say, I believe you're talking about Smith, right? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you could say whatever you want. In my research, I think he's a Freemason. I think there's strong enough evidence to suggest he's a Freemason.
Oh,
too.
Right. He. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. And oh my goodness, who knew? Okay, I grew up as a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was first generation from Denmark. She came over here with her parents. They were proselytized in Denmark, and they came over to this country. And my grandmother taught me when I was a child about tithing and about Joseph Smith and all this other stuff. Well, of course you're going to believe your grandmother. You love her. You look up to your grandmother, especially when she's nicer than your mother. And
right.
And so anyway, as I was, and I taught what is called seminary institute, and I was teaching these classes. And as I was going through the Book of Mormon, it didn't jive. It did to a point, but then they started talking about Columbus and what a great person he was. And I thought, great person? He killed millions of people. He was part of the sugar trade. He was a piece of garbage. A mass murderer. And they're talking about how wonderful he was, and I'm thinking, something's not clicking here. And so I just started looking at background, and then I, when you're a member of the church initially, years ago, it used to consume most of a person's week. There'd be a women's meeting on Tuesday and a children's program on Thursday and another program for the teenagers on Tuesday or Wednesday night. Then you had to give 10% of your income, pre-tax income, to the church. Plus you had to give to the building fund. Plus you had to give fast offerings. They were taking your money, your time, your talent. They were consuming your life. And you get so wrapped up into this, what essentially was a brainwashing operation. And, yeah, it was a brainwashing operation. Mm-hmm. And most recently, they consolidated the meetings all on Sunday. And so years ago, I started slipping out because I couldn't stand to go to the last 2 hours. I'd go to the first hour just feeling obligated to keep up appearances. But then I'd slip out the back door and come home, and I hated Sunday. Oh, gosh, I hated Sunday. And I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I refuse to do this anymore. I don't care what Grandma said or whatever I taught, whatever I believed, I didn't do it anymore. But the one thing that I did learn from being a Mormon is how to do research. Because part of the research efforts, they want you to trace your genealogy. So I ended up being the director of the biggest family history center in the country. I had 50 people, volunteers. They don't pay anybody anything. They get a lot of free labor. This free labor doesn't just apply to family history centers. It applies to hunting resorts. It applies to everything and anything that the church has its hands in. And pretty much the church is a family business, because I, several years ago, I put together what is called a Jed file and connected all the current leaders of the church and discovered that they pretty much were all associated or descendants of the founders, the founder and or the people that were at the top of the money heap back then. And I spent a lot of time doing research. So the one thing that I can say is that I learned how to do research early on. And in fact, I got involved with family history research when I was 18 or 19 years old. I don't have a lot of formal schooling. I was lucky enough to, I didn't start school until I was 6 and a half. I skipped a couple of grades. I was homeschooled, but I homeschooled myself. I was fortunate in my native blessings. I was blessed. And so I learned how to seek the truth. But I just wasn't thinking that the truth was not in Mormonism. I didn't discover that until later. And then when I became the director of the Family History Center, and I was in that position for 10 years, I noted that when I made the deposit because they collect money from the patrons that come into the Family History Center to get records, pay for looking at those records. And as I was doing the deposits, and I worked for nothing, okay? I worked 3 days a week for nothing. Nothing. And I spent all this, it was amazing. But everybody works for nothing because they think they're doing God's work. So anyway, when I was doing the deposits, I was depositing the money into an account called the Corporation of the President. And I thought, Corporation of the President? Wow, corporation? And then I started looking and I thought, oh my gosh.
Well, perhaps this will be a good finishing point. We'd like to get you back on next month, Deanne, so we could pick up on not only on this story, but there's still an awful lot we didn't get to. We want to talk a little Federal Reserve, income taxes, UBI. You've been warning about this since at least 2009 in regards to redistribution of wealth and all this the stimulus package stuff that we're seeing now. Chemtrails, too. There's so much that we still have to discuss, but unfortunately, we're just about out of time. So what we allow our guests in the last few moments here, outside some parting words, is what we call shameless self-promotion time. So we already mentioned the Twitter handle. We mentioned the website again, but let's rehash that again. But anything else that you would like to get out to the listening audience, we could do that as well.
Okay, as far as the Federal Reserve, Congress created it. It's always been a myth that it was created on Jekyll Island, and they got together, and blah, 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 blah. Congress created it. They could get rid of it, but they used it as a whipping boy to do whatever the heck they want. It is audited every year, as all corporations are. People have made a lot of money by making claims, oh, we've got to get us out, and we've got to do this, and they write books and all this stuff. Congress is owned, but the Federal Reserve itself is federal. Congress could get rid of it if they wanted to, but they use it and abuse it, and they get rich. They get very rich.
Of course,
and,
yep.
And the Constitution does not protect us from anything. The Constitution was written by the elite for the elite. It was never written for the people. The people that they talk about in the Constitution are the elite. And we weren't there. We didn't sign up for that stuff. And people say, oh, but we have the Constitution, and it protects our right to do this and that. What rights is it protecting people now during this COVID situation? What right does it protect you in keeping your guns? What rights are you receiving as a result of this piece of paper? And I must say that George W. Bush said one time that all it was a GD piece of paper.
Hmm.
That's probably one of the few truth statements that he actually made.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, we could pick back up on that, too. I was going to ask you, what was a more evil empire crime family, the Bush crime family or the Clinton crime family? Maybe we could pick back up that
okay,
on.
Okay, we can.
We'll do that next show. Yeah,
we can go way back. We can go.
Yeah.
I'm a historian. I really like history.
Well, let's do that. Let's leave it at that, Deanna. We thank you so much for joining the program today. We got, I think, close to an hour into this program. Yeah, nearly an hour. So get on over to Spingola.com, folks. Truly. follow her work. There's books there. There's articles. There's links to her radio program that she does every Saturday. Her Sandy Hook research is there as well. Even a section there with leaving the LDS. So get on over there. Check it out today. I do have to close now. I have to get ready to do my own solo premium podcast in just a moment, folks. Until next time, stay safe. And God bless.
Thank you.
Good stuff, Deanna. We got 55 minutes in. Fantastic. That was truly a lot of information, and I know my people will appreciate it. So be in touch with me and just let me know in regards to like the timing of this Saturday. And if it doesn't work, we'll do it another time. And I'll reach on out to you. And if you want to join us over the next month or two to pick back up, we could bring you back on as well.
Okay. Yeah, it would probably be the 24th, but I'm waiting to hear back from some other folks, and it'll sure. be the 24th if you're available.
Okay,
thereafter.
Okay, yeah, we'll play it by ear, no doubt about it. Well, I appreciate the time, and looking forward to our next conversation. Appreciate it.
Me too. Thank you so much.